I'm sitting at home bored one night when I do what all normal people do. I put on Netflix and start searching. You can probably guess that I'm a history nerd because, well, this is why you're even here listening to this podcast. Naturally, that means I gravitate to historical dramas, and there was a Versailles staring right back at me. I didn't want to watch the show at first. I mean, you know these people get down. There's always a ton of exposition. But I'm a sucker for history, so why not? By the time the first episode was through, I had lost my breath. The cliffhanger was so stunning and outrageous. I just had to Google it. It couldn't be true, right? Was there ever a secret black princess of France? If you'd like to find out, you're going to want to stay tuned, because what follows is a tale of intrigue, sex, race, and so much, much more. Welcome to the Black Side of History. I'm your host, XO. Imagine being summoned to the Queen of France's rooms in 17th century France. Queen Maria Teresa of Spain's luxurious, spacious room, to be exact. She's been pregnant for what seems like ages, and what's worse, being the standoffish Spanish queen that she is, she's not particularly popular as it is already. Still, protocols are protocols, and you have to show up. And instead of attending the joyous birth of the new Dauphin or Dauphine, you see that the queen has given birth to a child with dark-colored skin. That seems to be the tale anyway, that Queen Marie Therese of France, wife of King Louis XIV, gave birth to a black child that was never seen or heard from again. So what's the real story? What's the tea? Let's break down the who, what, and when, as best as I possibly can. Queen Maria Teresa of Spain was born in 1638 to Elizabeth of France and King Philip IV of Spain, and at 22 years old, married her 22-year-old cousin on both sides, Louis XIV. I'm so glad there was no creepy age difference because, man. Anyway, she married Louis as part of a reconciliation between Spain and France. If you're wondering why there isn't much to say about Queen Maria Teresa, it's because she's kind of a non-factor when it came to drama and political intrigue. She didn't really care about politics or reigning all that much. She was deeply religious and was said to be very pious, so her mind was on her spirituality, not on necessarily being a queen and being seen. Being in the 17th century French court of Louis XIV would have been like living in a soap opera every day. Instead of being all up in the drama, she preferred to gamble and chill out. She was appointed regent for a period while Louis went off to war. But even then, she made no splashes. Her life kind of sucked, to be honest. Louis XIV was notoriously unfaithful, but not at first. I'll give him credit for that, I guess. He allegedly kept it in his pants and only for her for the first year of their marriage. What happened to change that? Who knows? But after that first year, all bets were off. That leaves an opportunity for someone to give the queen the love and affection her unfaithful husband wasn't giving her. As for Louis XIV, he was a cheater, but he was also a visionary, eccentric, imperialist, and not so perfect himself. He had terrible breath for one thing. That's not good. That's automatically minus all of the points. He was also incredibly affected by the rebellion between Parliament and the monarchy that led to nobles taking up arms against him and his family when he was a kid. Still, we wouldn't have the palace at Versailles without his ideas and his vision. And let's not forget, without the laborers, there would be no Versailles. So let's give credit where credit is due, shall we? With all of the political intrigue and backstabbing going on at court, how did the queen even find herself in a position for her child to be black? It's not hard to imagine why the queen would seek comfort in another man's arms herself. Louis didn't really love her. In fact, when he learned of her painful death from abscesses on July 30th, 1683, he is reported to have said, "This is the first chagrin which she has given me." What a man. And as for that voice, guys, that's how I'm going to assume he sounded, because you kind of have to be an asshole to say that about your wife and mother of your children. Well, one of the mothers of your children. How did Marie find herself with the man that would be the alleged father of her black daughter? Well, French noblewomen had a nasty, inhumane habit of keeping human beings as pets. The French court was also super into genres that were African and Asian, but that's another podcast episode. Let's just say the more things change, the more things stay the same. These proto-culture vultures used to keep actual human beings, people with dwarfism, especially Africans with dwarfism, to offset their lighter complexions with the darker complexions of their human quote-unquote pets. I'm not even joking. But if you follow this podcast long enough, you'll learn about far more truths that are stranger than fiction. Anyway, the queen being of Spanish descent, where the practice was extremely popular and being a reigning monarch was no exception, and owned her own human pet called Nabo. Maria Teresa was standoffish and not really keen to be social, so her circle of friends was very small. Having someone forcibly tied to you is guaranteed companionship, so it's no surprise that the queen found comfort in Nabo. I mean, if you're a lonely woman whose husband continuously cheats on you and embarrasses you in front of everybody, you're probably gonna want some comfort. Dear Nabo, here's what little we know of him. And even that may be a rumor. Still, keep in mind that Nabo was most likely a slave from one of the kingdoms the French or Spanish had trade with or knowledge of. Author Sandra Gouland was able to track down a few of the rumors. If you're not familiar with her, then you definitely should get familiar with her. I'm a huge fan of her Josephine B. series. She's a really good authority on French history, being an author of several novels featuring Napoleon Bonaparte and King Louis XIV and his court. One rumor about Nabo's origins comes from a particularly salacious blog that Gouland mentions, or quotes. "It was rumored at court that the child was fathered by an African dwarf named Nabo, a young man from Dahomey, brought from his country by the Admiral François de Vendôme, Duc de Beaufort, as a friend present from the King of Dahomey to the Queen Marie Therese." Is this possible? Perhaps. But it should be of note that the Duc de Beaufort was in and out of prison and battle. When would he have had the time to give Queen Maria Theresa a human being? I'm not saying it's impossible, just a little unlikely that it was him per se. One rumor by Ivorian journalist Serge Billet implies that Nabo was sent to the Bastille for bedding the king's wife and became the inspiration for The Man in the Iron Mask, written by black author Alexandre Dumas. I've read The Man in the Iron Mask and I'm something of a Dumas fangirl. It is unlikely that Dumas would keep Nabo's race a secret and change him into a white guy who looks like the Sun King himself. I'm just saying that he probably would have made him black. His own father was a well-known black noble. Gouland found still more rumors that Nabo's name wasn't really Nabo, but Augustine. This is something that makes sense considering that the name Nabo probably is a nickname and a pejorative one at that. In Spanish, Nabo means turnip. How original. In Bricktop's Paris, for African-American woman in Paris between the two world wars, author T. Deneen Sharpley Whitling gives us a bit more info. According to Whitling, the king's cousin, La Grande Mademoiselle, Duchesse Anne-Marie Louise d'Orléans de Montpensier, confirmed that Queen Maria Teresa did indeed give birth to a girl that, quote, resembled a little handsome Moor, end quote, that was always with the queen. La Grande Mademoiselle wasn't just some play cousin. She was actually related to Louis and his brother Philippe. Why would she lie? I mean, there are reasons, I'm sure, but these were white people in the 17th century. It's not like they were going to be quick to proclaim that they had a black member of the family. I mean, they're in the middle of conquests and slavery. I highly doubt that they were progressive on matters of race. That said, there were plenty of others who disavowed the black nun of Moray, to include some contemporary historians. Some say that Maria Teresa did give birth to a dark-complected child, but that was due to her being born premature or stillborn with purple-bluish skin. That wasn't even the craziest of theories. One incredibly racist rumor that found footing in certain circles of the nobility explained that the queen was minding her own business one day, when that rascally Nabo jumped out at her very pregnant majesty. The queen is startled, and this in turn caused the infant to take on a darker complexion and become black. That was for the more simple nobles. Everybody else with a brain knew better. As for this infant's remains, Louis himself reportedly announced the baby's death a few days later in a state missive, and the funeral featured a white baby. Still, this is a family with immense power, the House of Bourbon. Infant mortality rates were obviously higher compared to today's, and so were maternal mortality rates. It wouldn't have been hard to find a dead white infant to bury and lay in state. The Queen's attending physicians certainly didn't say anything, but that still didn't stop the court from saying that the baby girl that the queen gave birth to was still living, in hiding, and very Moorish, or black. So, who was this little girl who captivated the French nobility? She was influential enough for Voltaire, among other prominent writers, to write about her. According to the Voltaire Foundation, Voltaire himself went to visit the black nun of Moray, Louise Marie Therese, and was convinced that she was not Maria Teresa's daughter, but Louise's illegitimate daughter with an African woman, possibly an actress or a servant. Voltaire and his mentor Monsieur de Caumartin, the Comte de Moray, went to visit Louise Marie Therese in the convent. Voltaire was so stricken by her resemblance to Louis XIV that he remarked about it, or allegedly visited her and remarked about this strong resemblance. Quote, she was extremely dark-skinned and furthermore bore a resemblance to him, Louis XIV, end quote. Then there's the matter of the 20,000 écus. Monsieur de Caumartin is the one who told Voltaire about the stipend set aside for Sister Louise by the king. It's incredibly generous and magnanimous of Louis to take care of his wife's child from outside of the marriage. Well, the alleged child from outside of the marriage. There's also the matter of when Marie Therese would have had time to have a physical relationship with Augustine, aka Nabo. Sister Louise had been at the convent from her infancy to the end of her life. One detail about her life that sticks out is the fact that she took her vows later in life. This is uncommon because Most young girls and women who took the vows to become nuns do so at much younger ages. This actually indicates some hesitation or potential hesitation on Sister Louise's part and an independent streak. It couldn't have been easy for her. She would have been in her 30s when she took these vows. Still, it wasn't like she was always lonely. According to the French Wikipedia page for her, she was visited by the king, queen, their other children, the Princess Palatine, which I'm assuming they mean the princess of the German Palatinate, and spy Louis de Rouvroy, the Duke of Saint-Simon. The people that dispute Sister Louise's alleged royal lineage can't explain why a black woman would be visited by a parade of rich, noble white people. It's not like they hadn't ever seen a person of color before. They were all acquainted with black people. And get this, Saint-Simon wrote that when these noble, distinguished guests went to go see Sister Louise, they regarded her with quote-unquote kindness and not as a curiosity. Still, let's not get too romantic about this. Royal illegitimate children by Louis and his myriad baby mothers were typically well taken care of and enfranchised, for a lack of better words. Louise was consigned to a convent in the Order of Saint Benedict probably because of her race. Louis must not have gotten the memo about loving your kids equally. There is a third rumor, but this seems even more unlikely considering the pension and other monetary gifts that Louise received. There doesn't seem to be any records of Louis doing this much for the children of his white servants that I found glaringly obvious, if at all. One rumor states that King Louis had two black servants, or just one male black servant and his wife, who had a child that they were so embarrassed of that they had asked Madame de Maintenon, the king's mistress, and former governess of his kids, by his other baby mother, Madame de Montespan, to take care of their child and put her in a convent. I don't know a lot of black folks, living or dead, who would entrust their child to rich, strange, white people they don't know, who were actively enslaving Africans and keeping them as pets. Just saying. The reality is, we may never fully know unless we can do some DNA testing. I don't know if that will happen in my lifetime, but I hope it does. It's hard to separate fact from fiction when a good chunk of the too few memoirs are said to be written by Louise's courtiers and baby mamas, like Madame de Montespan, but actually written decades later by people who weren't even there. Some of them weren't even born yet. Like, for example, Saint-Simon is allegedly not even born when all of this was happening. If the story is a hoax, then what was the impetus for lying about it? To humiliate the king or queen? Then why did they end up having Maures du Maurier fondant and candies at the time? Stranger things have happened. Just ask the Romans. All jokes aside, there's a very real portrait of Sister Marie Louise Therese, allegedly painted by the same royal painter who painted other members of the royal court. It is unsigned. And this painting still hangs at the Bibliothèque Saint-Geneviève in Paris, or the Saint-Geneviève Library in Paris. According to the Wikipedia article on this, research done by the Société de l'Histoire de Paris et des Îles de France that was published by Honoré Champion in 1924 concluded that this pastel portrait was painted around 1680. And it was painted again, just like I said, by the same hand that was responsible for painting a series of 22 pastel portraits of the kings of France, all the way from Louis IX to Louis XIV. Yes, the alleged father of the nun of Moret. If you believe some folks, Voltaire were looking at you. And this would have been done between 1681 and 1683. And this would have also been done on the behest of Father Claude Dumoulinet, the librarian of the Saint-Genevieve Abbey. The plot thickens. That's quite a lot of bother for someone who just claimed to be a princess and not, you know, actually a princess, allegedly. I wish there was more about her out there, but the information is just so sparse. I wonder what her days were like in the convent. What were the visits like if they really happened? And even if the claims that she was Louis' daughter fall flat, I'd love to know about how a black child ended up in a convent away from her parents in the 1600s. I always wonder if she was at peace with the decision she made and how her way of life turned out when she passed in 1732 in Moret-sur-Loing. And I honestly hope that she was. There are other claims that kind of hedge around it. This supposed black princess of France, where others acknowledge that there was a child born to Queen Marie Therese that was a female, but that she was very ugly. And what we know about race and racism, wouldn't be a far, far stretch to believe that maybe that person was just being kind of rude and kind of racist about the child's skin tone. I mean, who says a baby is ugly? Especially if that baby died young because of health issues. But, you know, the truth and history is stranger than fiction. Thank you for listening to episode 1 of The Black Side of History. Literally, thank you. I produce this podcast out of love for history and to challenge myself. I also think that far too much history is inaccessible. So if you'd like to help me keep The Black Side of History going, please consider donating and helping a comrade out. But if you can't donate, no matter how small the amount is, then please share and like and subscribe and spread the word, especially to these younger black youth who are looking for history but they can't find it. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, written and produced by yours truly. Episode 2 will be back in 2 weeks. It takes a lot to research this stuff. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me at The Black Side of History on Twitter. Just look us up at The Black Side Pod. And you can also find me at XO Seattle Slim. Don't forget to tune in to our other podcast, Run the Means, where I and my co-host, Rickety Cricket, talk about everything the working class is talking about with extra working class and a side of working class with 33% more working class. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have an awesome rest of your week, and I will see you in 2 weeks.